Welcome to the Midday with Vicki and Norman.
And we have a guest with us, pianist Peter Tukoch, who is in Madison and will be performing a concert Friday night and is taking a little bit of his time to talk with us about what he does. Thank you and welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Well, what you're doing most immediately, I suppose, well, in a couple of days anyway, is a program Friday night at 8 at Morphy Recital Hall at the UW-Madison, a program of Beethoven and Debussy and Chopin, and then, count them, two pianos, a sonata in F minor by Brahms.
Right, yeah. It took me a while to decide on this program. Lately, I've been more interested in collaborating with people, so I didn't want to play an entire solo recital, so half of it is fine. And the other issue was I didn't want to play any Beethoven sonatas because this is Kit's great achievement.
Christopher
to play
Taylor,
them.
Yeah.
Christopher Taylor, right. So I'm playing, the Beethoven that I'm playing is the Andante Favori, which originally was the second movement of the Waldstein sonata. And on the advice of friends, which Beethoven not always took, but in this case, fortunately, he did, he was told that this is really not quite appropriate to that sonata. It's a very lovely minuet with variations, and it makes a wonderful incidental piece, but he replaced it in the Waldstein with what we now know as the Introduzione, which brings in that beautiful third movement and so on. So I've tried to insert this Andante into the sonata, but it really doesn't work very well.
Fascinating.
Now, speaking of collaborating, actually, we have a recording of you collaborating with yourself, playing both parts of a sonata.
That's another sonata, which is not part of the 32.
Right.
By the way, I want to say that Kit and I are part of a growing club of Beethoven 32 players. It used to be, like, I think of it as the four-minute mile.
Yeah.
Because doing the 32 was a huge achievement, but
yes.
Somehow once it's been done, it becomes feasible. So now there's quite a few. We're still an elite club, but it's growing.
How many do you think you have in your fingers at any given time? How many of those 32 sonatas?
That's a good question. I should be able to play any of them on, let's say, 3 or 4 days' notice.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you know them, but you'd have to bring them back, you know, in a way.
Yes.
And the Hammerklavier, I would request at least
special
a week.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
So this sonata is an early one by Beethoven. Beethoven was not given to salon music, unlike Schubert, who was a wonderful kind of intimate four-hand music writer. So, but this is an early four-hand sonata that he wrote for himself and one of his colleagues. It's in two movements, and I recorded it as part of sort of a bonus CD for my recording of the 32. And I decided to record it with myself, which is actually harder than it seems.
No, it seems hard.
Yeah, because when you play with a live person, you can adjust and you do chamber music. But
yes.
The way I did it, of course, I had to record one part and then I had to record with myself the other part. And the one part is, of course, on tape. So it is totally inflexible.
Very tricky.
It is what it is.
And the fascinating thing about that is that even though it's the same player playing the same instrument, possibly at virtually, well, let's say the same day or the same hour, it still doesn't come out the same way twice.
It doesn't come out the same way. You know, you listen to the recorded part and say, what were you thinking? So it was challenging. I mean, I actually had to take the tape home and rehearse with myself to be able to know where there were little moments or whatever.
Yes.
And it came out okay. You know, it's maybe not 100% tight, but I think it's an enjoyable little piece. It's a minor Beethoven, but it has very attractive.
Got along pretty
features.
Well with yourself.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, a big dose of cheerful Beethoven.
Right, yeah. It's just a little appetizer.
That was the Sonata in D Major, Opus 6. Very early work for piano four hands, and Peter Takacs and Peter Takacs performing that.
That's right.
Both parts. You had, speaking of early, we were talking about the early Beethoven, speaking of early careers, you had an interesting first 14 years or so. You started playing the piano, taking lessons before you were four?
Right, yeah. It's a little story. It probably got polished over the years, embellished, whatever. But the story is that I was 3 and a half, and my sister was taking piano lessons. She was 5. And I began to play her pieces. I began to tell her she was playing wrong notes. Which did not make me very popular with my sister. But the teacher went to my mother and said, you know, your child is very talented, and she thought he was talking about my sister. So, no, it's little Peter, you know, he's got good ears, and he's got nice little hands, and so on. So I started studying piano around, you know, before my 4th birthday.
And this was in Romania.
I was born in Bucharest.
And by the time you were, what, about, 14, you had quite a number of public performances, to your credit.
I started playing my first recital when I was 7. And I played quite a bit around Bucharest. And then, of course, there was a whole period when we were persona non grata in Romania because we had made a request to leave the country. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I was not allowed to play anymore. And even taking piano lessons was dangerous for my teacher because we were really ostracized as traitors or whatever you want to call it. So I took clandestine piano lessons. We went at night. And so it was kind of, you know, for a kid, it was sort of exciting in a way, you know, to be doing something illicit. So that took about 2 years between applying to leave and actually leaving.
So 2 tough years.
It was tough, yeah, and, you know, for the whole family. You know, you basically hanging around hoping to get the news.
How did you make the transition then? You were just waiting to hear from
the
school that you had applied to. Or the Paris Conservatory?
Right. No, we went to Paris as immigrants, and I applied to the Paris Conservatory. And we were just there 1 year. Mm-hmm. I didn't particularly enjoy the Paris Conservatory. It was very different from where I was, and it was a different system, you know. It was an interesting year. And then we were sponsored by an immigration service, and they asked us, you have 2 choices of where to go. You can either go to Dayton, Ohio, or Milwaukee, Wisconsin, neither of which we knew. So my father took out a map, and he looked at Dayton, and he looked at Milwaukee, and he said, well, Milwaukee looks nicer. It's by a lake. It's near Chicago. So we decided to opt for Milwaukee.
Uh-huh.
So I'm a Wisconsin boy adopted.
That's terrific.
Well, welcome back.
Thanks.
And you're here. You're one of the pianists that the School of Music at the UW-Madison has been inviting to perform and teach. And you will be performing Friday night and teaching a master class tomorrow.
Tomorrow in Morphy at 9:30 a.m. for the hardy souls. They want to get their Starbucks at 9 or whatever.
So how are they different now from when you began some years ago?
The students? Oh, that's an interesting question because I've been teaching for many years. Well, one of the obvious things is that it's a much more international group, you know. When I was a student, we were mostly Americans, but now it's a global industry, you know, and it's amazing to see the renaissance of music in the Far East and so on.
Yes.
You know,
mm-hmm.
You have students from Korea, Japan, China rising. So it's very interesting. It's hard to say, you know. There are some that are very hardworking, serious, and others that are less so. Some of my students listen to pop music, and then they go practice their Chopin or Ligeti or whatever. So, you know, I think music has become kind of more of a inclusive kind of thing. You know, it used to be, for us, when I grew up, the classical music was sort of on the highest echelon. You know, it was something very sacred to do. But I think now it's sort of competing among equals.
Although Haydn and Beethoven and Brahms and Liszt all spent a lot of time listening to folk music, and
that's true.
Certainly,
yeah, there was always
some of what would be called popular music of the day,
and they were much influenced by it. Yeah, I know Brahms, for example, loved gypsy music, which was the supposedly Hungarian music, but he sat in cafes and the gypsy fiddlers knew him, you know, and they would play extra fast for him, you know. Say, professor, here we are, you know. It's fine, you can hear it in the music.
Here's Hungarian dance number 18.
Exactly, right.
Now, since you mentioned Brahms, you do have a piece on your concert on Friday night, a transcription of the piano quintet.
Right.
And this is for two pianos, so...
Again, I didn't really want to play an all-solo recital, and I have a very, very dear connection to Howard Karp, who was my professor at the University of Illinois, where I went for my master's.
Uh-huh.
And so when I heard that I was going to play a recital in Madison, I called Howard and I said, would you like to play with me? And he thought about it. He's played this piece with his wife, Frances, and he called me back and he said, I'd be happy to. And he just were lucky because he had played the first piano part and I had previously played the second piano part. So we were playing parts we knew.
Good.
The other tricky thing about the Brahms is that if you've played the quintet version, you learn the piano part of the quintet, so you know it as such. And then when you play the two-piano version, you got some of it is the same as the piano part, and some is string parts.
Yeah. Added some notes.
Right, and sometimes you're playing the quartet parts. And so you have to be on the lookout that you don't slip back into playing the piano part that you know previously. So it's tricky, but it's... very exciting, and we've been rehearsing, and it's truly inspiring to play with Howard.
Are the string parts divided between the two piano parts then, or just...
They kind of shift around.
They do,
you know,
shift.
It's fascinating to see how he made this arrangement, you know. And there are some parts that sound better in the two-piano version. Not many. Usually the quintet version is beautiful because you can't really replicate a string sound.
Sure.
But the third movement is a scherzo that's very, very motoric. And it's got something that goes like and on two pianos it sounds very exciting because the piano is, you know, a percussion instrument.
Sure.
On strings sometimes it's a little tough to go so that's one part that I think actually works better for two pianos. But then there's some string quartet parts that are absolutely gorgeous, and we try very hard to sound like strings.
Now, we do have a recording here of a string and piano piece by Piazzolla.
Well, this is actually a quintet.
Quintet.
Right. And it's something, you know, I was talking about music becoming more inclusive.
Yes.
And I'm very fond of tango. And I'm very fond of Piazzolla. And this is in a quintet version that is in Piazzolla's favorite group, which is violin, bandoneon, electric guitar, bass, and piano. And it's a piece called Concierto para Quinteto.
Takes us just past 12:30, at which point today's 12:30 quiz question, but for now, Piazzolla.
Bringing the house down. Peter Takacs and friends.
With some Piazzolla. It's a quintet.
This is a Concerto para Quinteto.
What fun.
It's the title. Yeah, it's fun music.
Piano and bandoneon and...
Violin, electric guitar, and bass.
Wow.
It's Piazzolla's favorite group.
Mm-hmm. Great combination, too.
A quick thank you to Peter Takacs for being with us and spending a little time before your concert Friday night at 8 o'clock at Morphy Hall here on campus.
It's been a pleasure.